Jesus, the man. Aramaic, universal, his time, our time, all time. Lecture 1, the story of Jesus. This is the Christmas seminar on the campus of the University of Healing. The story of Jesus. Lecture 1, Jesus, the man. Aramaic, universal, his time, our time, all time. Where do we fit in this wonderful, wonderful adventure of the story of Jesus? Where do we fit? Well, actually, before we find out where we fit, let's see where he fits. Every one of us have the opportunity to come to this earth, to this dimension of life, to be whatever we want to be. And before we get here, we make a decision of the type of thing we'd like to do here on this planet Earth. We make a decision of the type of life we'd like to live. Some of us want to be martyrs. Some of us want to be mothers and fathers or sisters or brothers or aunts and uncles and cousins. You know, that is a difference. Some people are wonderful sisters, you know. You talk about their mother, their father, their brothers, or their relatives, or anybody else. That's not important. But they're sisters, like our friend with her sister act. Sisters, sisters. And we want to be what we want to be. And it's not always the same. And it's not always done the same way by everybody either. Now, let's look at Dorothea here. We call her Dodie. And what is she doing? Dodie has always been a dynamic, powerful, magnificent woman. And she decided she was going to go into decline. And so she moved into this home for elderly people who are sick and who cannot take care of themselves, because she wanted to surround herself with the type of people who make her happy, you know. And so then Dodie said to me, "That doesn't really make me happy." And I said, "Well, it doesn't really matter where you are. You can be here or there or any place. But wherever you are, Dodie, you are a practitioner." "No, I don't want to be a practitioner." "Dodie, you are a practitioner." "I don't want to be a practitioner." "Well, there's nothing that you can get around it. A practitioner is a person who believes in themselves and likes themselves and sees everybody exactly like they are." Now, is that so terrible? Is that so terrible to see all the world exactly like you are, and especially if you are a wonderful person? Well, now, that's what we all have done. We all have come here for our various missions and our various purposes and our various ideals. And once we get here, we say, "Hey, it's not too cool being a paraplegic. It's not too cool having 12 or 18 children to look after, you know, and no husband to help bring in the food for them. It's not cool to do these things." Well, then don't do it. Don't do it. You can revise your plan at any time. You're saying, "Well, Herb, what does all this have to do with the story of Jesus' life?" You just listen. You'll hear. You can change your plan at any time if you don't like it. And if you like it, stay with it. And if it can be amended a little bit to make it a little more powerful or more beneficial, then go for it. Okay. Dodie has just decided that she's going to give up on being a minister to the people in the rest home. She's going to be a practitioner, which she cannot help but be. And she is going to see every one of those rascals in that aged home, in that sick house. She's going to see every one of those rascals whole and perfect, just like she is. She's going to see every one of those rascals having fun and enjoying life and dancing up and down the stairs. Whether they got a crutch or a game leg or whether they got their wheelchair, they're going to dance up and down those stairs. And if they cannot operate the wheelchair alone on the stairs, you know what they're going to do? They're going to create some big hulk around there who just likes to be helpful, and he's just going to lift those people up and down those stairs just for the fun of it, because he thinks it's wonderful. He thinks, you see, do anything you want. Create what you want. And then, you know, I have a friend. I sold him a beach home. His name was Jay Ward. He made Bullwinkle, Jay Moose, and all these cartoon characters. Quite a prosperous fellow. And he built himself a house up on the bluff, up on the top of the bluff, overlooking the beach and everything. And I said, well, you got to walk down that long way to the beach every day when you want to go to the beach. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, don't you? He said, nope. He said, I put an elevator in. An elevator from the top of your house to the beach, all the way down there? Wow! Why not? He can afford it. So he put in the elevator. It's a slant elevator, it's floating down. And he and his family get in there. And it's a lovely little rondelay, you might say, you know, with seats all around and cocktail table if you want it, and you know, all the goodies, because you know, it takes about a minute or two to go down there, you know. And so he does what he wants. He doesn't let any limitation limit him, because he can afford to do whatever he wants to do, and he does it. Now you can afford it too. You can afford it too. Okay. Jesus, the man, he decided before he came here that he was going to play the role he's wanted to play. Now, I give you the answer right away. Did Jesus want to be a great teacher? Did he want to be a sharer? Did he want to be a martyr? Did he want to get killed on the cross, you know? Did he want to do any of these things? No. He didn't want to do any of those things. What he wanted to do was to be himself and have fun. So Jesus said continuously, time and time again, to everyone who came to him, because he was a charismatic person, A, number one, and they said, Jesus, you know how to heal people, heal me. And he said, oh, okay, you're home perfect. But I still got my game leg. Well, you didn't tell me that you didn't like what you got. You didn't like who you are. But that's stupid. No, I see you whole and perfect. I see you the perfect creation of what you want to be, whether it's with a game leg or whether it's with a game mind, you know, or whether it's with a problem of any kind. That's what you want to be. Now, if that's not what you want to be, then don't see yourself that way, and I won't see you that way, and you won't be that way. But whatever it is you want to be, you want to be. Well, hey, Jesus, what about in your life? You had some pretty tough... Hey, you're getting ahead of the game. Just wait while we take each little step by the step, and you will find out that it wasn't what it appeared to be. Okay. Now, Jesus the man. So, you say, what about the nativity? What about the birth where he, you know, didn't have a father? What do you call that birth? You don't even know what to call that birth. Immaculate conception. What does immaculate, that sounds very clean, doesn't it? An immaculate house is a very clean house. Immaculate conception, that sounds like a very clean conception, doesn't it? I mean, you know, let's look at the word for what it says. Now, we've been told the word means that there was no daddy there, but we know better. The Spirit, God, was supposed to be the daddy, you know, but it was a very clean conception, very neat, very well done. Stop and think about what you say when you use words. You say immaculate conception, you say very nice, very clean, very perfect, absolutely. How was the conception of the child? Immaculate, perfect, wonderful. You mean no father? I didn't say that. I said it was clean and nice and perfect in every way. Immaculate. And you see, we want to right away make out of immaculate something different. Because whatever it may have been, and we'll go into that a little later too. But what is it that Jesus was? Jesus had an immaculate idea of himself, of being absolutely perfect, absolutely wonderful, being himself and having fun no matter where he was, what he did. And so he came forth on this earth in that immaculate way. Perfect, beautiful, and so on. But what about the birth, the virgin birth and all that sort of stuff? What about all that stuff? Hey, that's interesting. And we'll go into that a little later too, but that's interesting. But so what? So what? If I said to you, do you realize how many sick people are on the face of the earth? What would you say to me? Lots and lots and lots. And that's not true. There are very few sick people on the face of the earth. There are very few hospitals. The majority of the people, the super majority, like 99 and 99/100 percent of the people on the face of the earth are healthy. And the hospitals are just for that 0.1% that are not doing too well because they have created themselves that way. You see, our reality, what most people do is create themselves healthy. Now, most people create themselves wealthy. Oh, really? I see a lot of people that don't have wealth. Hey, what is wealth? Wealth is sufficient food. Yep. Sufficient clothing if you want it. Yep. Sufficient air to breathe. Yep. Sufficient whatever to have to enjoy life, a house or something. Yep. Remember the stories we've read about the cavemen, the prehistoric people? Where did they live? Out in the middle of the desert with the night air around them and so forth. Well, what's that tribe of people down in Africa who live out in the weather? It's a wonderful tribe of people who live in Africa, and they're little people. And they are naked all the time, and they eat, and they've had a couple of TV shows about them.
Calamari Desert.
Hmm?
The Calamari Desert.
The Calamari Desert? No. But the thing is, these...
Pygmies.
Pygmies? No, they were like pygmies, but they were not pygmies. They were just the desert.
Hmm?
The Bushmen. That's what they're called, the Bushmen. That's right. Thank you. They're called the Bushmen. Now, because they lived in the bush. They didn't have any clothes. They didn't have any houses. They lived right out in the open. When nighttime came, they just cuddled up in a ball and went to sleep. When daytime came, they got up. Now, why is it the animals didn't come and eat them up? You know, they're laying right out there like saying, here's dinner, not even running. And they were not. That was not their choice. Now, they had everything. And did they consider themselves rich? Yes. They considered themselves rich if they had a nice stick that they could use to work on whatever they worked on. But you see, they were lovely people, and are lovely people, doing their thing. Now, you, with your idea of what lovely is, come along and you say, hey, that's not cool. That's not cool. They should have a house. They should have clothing. They should have a grocery store, a drugstore, and stuff to go to in nearby, you know? And really, they don't need that. And are they beautiful people? Do they have ethics? Do they have morals? Do they have principles? Yes, they do. Now, what were Jesus' principles? Jesus' principle was to be himself and have fun. Now, Jesus spent 33 years on planet Earth. Okay? Isn't that cool? 33 years. Now, what did he do the first 30 years? First 30 years, he had a ball. We'll talk about them. He had a wonderful time. And the last 3 years, he spent in his ministry. And he was having a cool time there, too. Now, can you be immune to the bite of a rattlesnake?
Yes.
How do you become immune to the bite of a rattlesnake?
Be one as the rattlesnake.
You're one as a rattlesnake, and you do not feel the rattlesnake is a challenge to you. you are immune. Immune is in the mind. You say it's in the body, but it's in the mind. Because if you are frightened when something bites you, like a rattlesnake, you say, oh my God, I'm going to die. And then you die. You see, that's a stupid thing. But Jesus was in charge of his mind. Jesus was immune to all the earthly experiences. 40 days and 40 nights he went into the desert, separate from everything, immune to being hungry. When he came back, his disciples said, my God! And of course they had the right word for him there. My God, you must be hungry! And they wanted to feed him, so Jesus said, whatever, you know. Doesn't bother me. You must be thirsty! Whatever. You see, a master doesn't fight anybody. If they want to say you're hungry and thirsty, oh, flow with them. If they want to say eat meat or potatoes or spaghetti or milk or processed cheese and processed foods and stuff like that, Jesus said, sure. It goes in, goes out. I don't give any claim to it. I don't need that to survive. I don't need that to live, you know. You see, that's what a master does. And was Jesus a master? I'd say he's pretty good. He's a pretty good representation of a master for us. And we can start learning and living our life, realizing what a master really is. And as we do that, we find some very wonderful things happening in our world. Now, what are you doing? The story of Jesus. Oh, how holy, how wonderful, how great. I can tell you one thing. Jesus is not more holy than you are. Jesus is not more wonderful than you are. In fact, he said that. The things that I do, you can do too. It's easy. Just get with the game. Play the game. And we want to pretend that it's hard. So, okay. Jesus lived in an Aramaic type of community, in an Aramaic type of a world. And what does that mean? He lived in a world where they spoke Aramaic. He lived in a world where they had Aramaic customs. Now, do you think that he was limited by those customs? Do you think that he was limited by what he learned in those customs, what he learned in those programs? Do you think he was limited in any way? No. He was not limited in anything because he was immune. He was immune to any idea that he had to learn something. Now, why was he immune? Well, he went to the Father within, and the Father within told him all these things. Yeah. Can you do that? Sure. Do you do that? No. Oh, you do? That's good. If you do that, that's good. But how many people do that when they have a question? Oh, dear, I wish I knew the answer. You know. And Jesus didn't say, oh, dear, I wish I knew the answer. He had trained himself from the very beginning, before he came here, that he was one as the allness of the universe. Now, Ellen goes around talking to little children saying, you're a genius, you're a genius. And she's so right. But she doesn't take it a step further. She doesn't say, are you the mother of this child? Be careful. Because this child already knows everything. Accept that, respect that, believe this child is divine and knows everything. And this child is destined to great and wonderful things by its choice. And don't shake the boat too much. That's a lot of shaking. But let those seeds be planted. Let those seeds be planted. Because what are you doing? Ellen, what are you doing? You are treating that child like you're treating yourself. You're treating yourself as a genius. You're treating that child as a genius. You see in that child all the genius that you are. Isn't that terrible?
Wonderful.
My goodness sakes. Just imagine if every parent expected their child to be as wonderful as they are and better. You see, Jesus' mother and father were nice guys. But they were ordinary people. They had nothing to do with his teaching. You say, well, the Holy Spirit came unto them and said these things. okay, that's cool, but let that go by, because throughout his entire youth, they never mentioned anything about that. Even in his mission, in his ministry, they didn't do anything about that. So just stop playing the game that his mother and father were great saints and that they were teaching him all this saintly stuff. His mother and father had a number of children, and they let these children run like wild banshees, you know. They let them do what they wanted to do until they were old enough to work or to help. And that means when they were 5 or 6 or maybe 7 years old. But up until that time, these kids were running around like a bunch of naked Indians, you know, just having a great old time. And what did they believe about themselves? Whatever they brought along with them when they were born is what they believed about themselves. He believed that he was God. He believed that he was great. He believed that he and the Father were one, if he wanted to say it in those terms, because that was the Hebrew teaching. And he believed that. And they believed in truth. They believed in honesty. They believed in integrity. They believed in all these things. Now, he never went away from that belief. The ordinary Hebrew family went away from that belief. The ordinary, quote, quote, Christian family goes away from that belief. You are a Christian if you believe like we do. You're not a Christian because you're born a Christian. You're a Christian because you believe like we do. And if you are born a Christian and you don't believe like we do, then you're not a Christian the way we are believing that you're a Christian. You see, Jesus never had any of that. And I have a very good feeling that Jesus disappeared for a period of time. Now, we'll talk about where he disappeared to, but he disappeared. And he wasn't even missed by his family. You say, well, his mother was concerned about him when he was 12, and he was coming back from this place, and he's ended up talking to the rabbis and the priests. Yes, that's true. But she was only concerned because the neighbors were concerned. Where's your kid? You understand me? Where's your kid? She didn't even know that the kid wasn't there because she wasn't concerned. She released him. She let him walk his own way. Where's your kid? You know how that is? You know, where are your children tonight? Isn't that what they say on television as the children are out doing things they shouldn't be doing? They think maybe the children are out doing things that are good. Why do we always think that they're doing things that they shouldn't be doing? This is what we teach our children, and this is why society has such a hang-up on finding their spiritual quality. We can find our spiritual quality by having our mind clear and crystal clear on who we are. Now, Jesus knew who he was from the beginning. He chose it. You do too. You do too. Each one of you chose at the very beginning the kind of snot-nosed little kids that you were going to be. Or the beautiful children you were. Now, isn't that something? Why don't you say what you really want to be? What were you created to be? Now, why do you think they have the story about born-again Christians? Isn't that an interesting thing? Born-again Christians. Born-again. Born-again into what? If you are born into your Christ consciousness, if you are born into your spiritual reality, hey, that's cool. But if you're just born into somebody's idea of what Christianity is, then you got hang-ups. You got problems. So if you want to be born again, you can be born again. You can be born again instantly. Now, today, I give each one of you, as we hear these wonderful talks on the story of Jesus, I give each one of you the privilege of being Jesus Christ, of being divine in all that it means, of having been born and raised, and I don't want to say raised so much here, but born and raised as the Christ child was born and raised. Each one of you. Now, you say, but I have this background and I'm so many years old. No, you aren't. You're born new right now. You're born new right now. You're born new in this realization of who you really are. You are divine. You are glorious. You are God. You are the fulfillment of all. This is what Jesus did. Jesus went to the desert more times than we know, and he did his cleaning act there. He went to the desert because he was in society, and in society he heard enough garbage going on. Oh, we've got to help these poor people, or they're taking advantage of us, or they want to steal our country, or they want war, or they want these things. And he hears these things, and he says, hey, that's not me. Now, later in his life, he was more adept at it. But earlier, he worked at it by going to the desert. And he would leave his friends. And he'd go off into the desert, and he would treat and pray. And he would listen to the divine within him. And he would say, everyone in my world is beautiful. Everything in my world is beautiful. Could you conceive of him saying that? You sure can. Everything in my world is beautiful. Now, how many times have you gone off into prayer, into meditation, into private time for yourself, and you said, now I got to go over my problem, you know? Now, the person says, I have cancer. Oh, I got cancer. So you go in your meditation time, I got cancer, now what do I do about it? I got cancer, what do I do about it? I got cancer. And you see, you keep building the problem. So you go into your private time and you say, okay, the divine in me knows exactly how to handle this situation. The divine in me knows exactly how to handle this situation. I am whole and perfect. My body is the temple of my own inner self. My body is absolutely perfect. Every organ, action, and function of my body is perfect. Now, tell me, please, did I mention cancer at all?
No.
How does my body know what it's supposed to do? It is not going to dump cancer. You see, in most of our New Thought programs over the years, we have been taught, what does it mean when you have a cold? Can anyone tell me what the current concept of what it means when you have a cold? You are what? You are confused. When people are confused, they have a cold. And I won't mention all the rest of them, but there's a whole book put out. Unity has a book out on these. Of what are the symptoms of problems? You have this because you have that attitude. You have this because you have that attitude. You have, oh my goodness sakes. No. You take those things and you let them be. And you say, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. This is what Jesus did. Jesus was constantly aware of his Christhood. He was constantly aware of who he was. Now, was Jesus a little baby when he was baptized?
Nope.
No.
He was a young man.
He was a young man. Now, was Jesus baptized into his family? Was his mother and father there? Was his family there? Was anyone there who cared? No. Not even John the Baptist cared for him. John the Baptist said to him, Jesus, you're cool. I cannot baptize you because I'm not worthy of baptizing you. Jesus said, get on with it, boy. You got a mission to fulfill here. I wrote the story. Now do it. And so John the Baptist baptized Jesus. And it was not John doing much at all, was it? John merely walked with him as he went into the river. And then John held his head down for 10 minutes, you know, said, now you come up after this and you really are wonderful. No, he didn't do something like that. But this is what it sometimes is talked like. But they went in and they... What happened when they were baptized? All the old was washed away and all the new stayed, see? And this is what it is. These are Aramaic and universal activities. These are things from his time. These are things from the time that Jesus was running around playing games on earth. And he did play games. He had just as much fun as anybody else. And what did I tell you about Bill Gates? Bill Gates has parties at his house, and they play games at his house. Grown people playing games. And what do they play? They play mind games. They play games of chess. They play games of those things that utilize the mind and figure out what the mind is going on and going through, and to make the mind more active, brilliant, and alive and alert. Well, Jesus played these games all the time. Jesus walked through his world, and he looked at all the people in his world who were striving to learn, striving to be whole and perfect, striving to have a good life. And as he looked at these people, what did he see? He saw them whole and perfect. He saw them fulfilled. He knew the desire of their heart, and he saw it done. Now, none of these people realized that when Jesus was walking by them as a child, that the healings were taking place within them. They were just thinking, oh, I'm good now. Yeah, I'm good. I'm fantastic. Uncle Worrell, who worked with her husband in spiritual healing and in mental healing and so forth, she was in Russia, in Romania or Russia, wherever she was living as a child, and her mother knew that Olga had a healing touch about her. Whenever Olga went to somebody who had a hurt and would sit there and hold their hand, they would soon, very soon, become whole and perfect. And so the mother would send Olga over to the neighbors' houses whenever anybody had an illness. And Olga would sit there and talk with them and hold their hand. And then when Olga would leave, the people would get up and go about their work. They were healed. Now, what was that? What that was that Olga did not see them sick. Olga just saw them sitting in bed. Now, you saw the movie Pollyanna. And in the movie Pollyanna, she visited this one woman who was in bed. Don't you tell me I'm not sick. The woman didn't want to hear that she was not sick. And Pollyanna said, you should be out of bed doing things, and you should be going around having fun. You should be enjoying life. You shouldn't be stuck there in that bed. Well, now, nobody ever said that to the woman. Nobody ever looked at the woman as whole and perfect. Pollyanna didn't know illness. She didn't know how to see these things. She was like the Buddha, raised without having had those experiences, even though her own parents died and other things happened to her. But she didn't know about those. And so she called forth the wholeness in the people. This is what Jesus did. Jesus walked around as a young person, calling forth the wholeness in people. Because Jesus didn't know sadness. He didn't know illness. He didn't know limitation of any kind. Do you understand that? Now, can you do that? And of course, we use this as a message back and forth. But can you do that? Yes. And can you do that right now? Yes. As I told Dodi, I said, knock it off. When you are living in this home of people who have problems and they come to you with their problem, do not hear the problem. Have them come to you with their solution. Dodi, I'd like to be enjoying a healthier life. What's your suggestion? And Dodi would say, well, just come right over here. I don't know if it's big enough, but come right over here. We have a trash container. Now you take all the trash out of your life and dump it in that container. What are you talking about, Dodi? That's kind of silly. No, that is a symbol. Take all the trash in your life, don't look at it, and just put it in this trash container. Come on, come on, we'll pack. We've got a compactor with it, you know. It'll compact it down. Put it in there, put it in there, put it in there. And they say, Dodi, you are some sort of a crazy person. And, well, you came to me. You came to me asking for me to be a blessing in your life. So now follow my directions. Follow my directions. And so they throw all their trash in there. They throw all their mental problems in there, their physical problems in there. And then the next thing they know, they walk out the door, and they have forgotten that it was Doty, who said, put your trash in the container and now you're healed. They just walk out the door healed and they say, oh, I feel so much better. I feel good. This is a great day. And they forget that Doty did it. They forget that. But did she do it? She did nothing. She was a catalyst to get them to do it themselves. And this is what Jesus did. Everywhere Jesus went. That's why Jesus' mother said, Jesus, they're short on wine at the wedding. Go make some. Make some. I mean, Mom, this is sort of private stuff. You're not supposed to be telling people that I can do miracles. But he did it, didn't he? Because his mother asked him to do it. Now, how old was he at the time? Was he in his 20s? Was he in his teens? Or what was he? We don't know. They don't play that game. They should. That'd be kind of charming. But they don't play that game. Now, in the Aramaic world, Jesus was a charismatic person, and he was a wonderful person, somebody that everyone felt good about. He was the kind of person that no one bullied, no one picked on, no one was trying to be eager and mad with, no one was giving him a hard time at any time. Oh, really? Yes. When Jesus went to his cross experience, was that a hard time? No. That was part of his story, which we will get to. All throughout his life, he did not have a hard time. Do you think Jesus would have been born to a poverty family? No. They had to go to these various places and pay taxes, you know? And you can't pay taxes if you haven't got any money, you know? So, I mean, and then they had brothers and sisters, and they had food on the table, and they had all sorts of good stuff. They were not a poor family. They were not a poverty family. They were just a family living within their means, happily and harmoniously and joyously. Now, this is important for us to know the foundation of Jesus, because if we don't know the foundation of Jesus, the story of Jesus doesn't make any difference. We're basically having this entire seminar on the idea of Jesus the man. Jesus' spirit is there, but that will weave in from time to time. But basically, we're talking about Jesus the man, Jesus the human being. Oh, well, you got to say the woman, you know, the man, woman, the father, mother principle, and that sort of stuff. No, 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 no. We say Jesus the human, if you want to bring the man, woman in there. And you say Jesus the divine. And the moment you start saying God is the father, mother principle, what are you doing? You're limiting God. You're limiting what the principle is. Well, the mother principle is a reproductive principle. The father principle is the, what do you want to say it is? It's the going out and earning a living or something like that, you know. Big deal. That's not, what does that have to do with the price of beer in Russia, you know? Nothing. It has nothing to do with anything. And we constantly put things that have nothing to do with anything in our stories, and then we wonder why the story doesn't get across. No. Jesus was born in a royal birth. Who else do you know that was born in a royal birth, huh?
Me.
You? That's good. Well, I was going to use Stephen. Stephen. Oh, Stephen was nothing. He was just a little egg and a sperm getting together and coming out as a little hatchling, you know. And so he came out, and what happened? He came out at just the instant that he was the 100,000th baby born in his hospital. Big deal. Just a good chance. Well, no, Stephen, all of his life has done that. He has created himself having these glorious experiences. But Stephen lost point at one point along the way. Stephen didn't realize he is doing this to himself on purpose. It is not by chance. He is not a prince by chance. Even though born in the hospital in that way, they gave him all the gifts and they gave him all the money for the 100,000th child, you know, free birth, you know, no hospital bills and stuff like that. But he, you might say, was like Gomer, Forrest Gump. That's the key, son. He was, you know, I'd say he's like Forrest Gump. And Forrest Gump had no idea that he was poor or rich, that he could do or not could not do anything. He just was who he was. And Jesus was just who he was, perfect. And Stephen Stressley put them all in the same box here. He just is who he is. Now, he doesn't know how good he is. He doesn't know how wonderfully he can write. If he knew it, he'd write. But no, why doesn't Stephen write? Tell me, anybody. Stephen doesn't write because he hasn't got anything to say. Now, really, you just watch. The day will come when Stephen has something to say, and will he say it? Wow, yes. And the day will come. Look at Gertrude here. Gertrude, she had her mouth full of notes that she couldn't assemble. And all of her life, she couldn't sing worth a darn. And so all of a sudden, she went to a teacher, and the teacher said, Gertrude, take this string now, pull it, and all the notes fell into place. And then she sang like a nightingale from that moment forth. And she is sharing her beautiful voice and her beautiful song ability with the world. And it's great. But you see, up until that time, she didn't realize. She had no message to do. But now she has a message of love and peace, even though she's singing gospel-type songs. She has the message of love and joy and peace, and she sees in them all of that. Well, this is what Jesus did. Jesus didn't know he had a message, or did he? What did he say to the men in the temple when he was 12 years old?
I have to go about my
business. No. He said that to his mom. To the men in the temple, what did he say? He said, wisdom equal to theirs, okay? Can you imagine a 12-year-old kid talking to these old priests, who rabbis, who were, you know, well adept at their field, who knew upstairs, downstairs, inside, outside, they knew the whole thing, and here this young punk kid comes along, and he can understand it just as well as they do? My goodness sakes. But then his mommy came along and said, look, you scared the living daylights out of us, you know. You should let us know when you're not following in with the group, you know. And he said, I must be about my father's business. Now, who is his father? This was a term they used in those days representing God, because they did not speak the word God. They did not use the word God. God came lately. And the Old Testament never had God in it until it became modernized. But at that time, they used every term available to say God. Now, how many of you have seen Harry Potter? And in Harry Potter, what is the word that they don't speak? Of the evil, ugly person. Not God, but of the evil, ugly person. They don't mention his name because it is so so much an anathema, so evil to them. Well, now, Jesus had everything beautiful and good. Jesus did everything in a wonderful way. Jesus did everything in a positive way, in a glorious way. And he never mentioned evil. At one time, or two times, he mentioned the devil. Remember? Mm-hmm. What was one of them? What?
When he was tempted.
Yeah, and he said,
get thee behind me.
No. That's the second time. The first time, he said the devil tempted him to take over the world, and the devil would give him control of all the world if he would follow the devil. And and he said to the devil, no, thank you. And then Peter got on his case and said, Jesus, you don't need to go and get killed. You don't need to die. You don't need to take this terrible burden. You know, you don't have to do that. And then Jesus said to him, get thee behind me, Satan. Don't keep me from my program. Because we'll ask this question at this point too. At any time during Jesus' life, did he ever suffer pain?
No.
No. At any time in Jesus' life, did he ever stub his toe?
Yeah.
Did he ever do any stupid thing that was not harmonious for him?
No.
No. Did some people ever think he did silly things?
Yes.
Who?
Well, the Pharisees.
The what?
Whatever.
The Pharisees?
Yeah.
The priests?
Yeah.
What did they say? Well, they were amazed that he knew what he knew. You understand?
Yeah.
They did not think he was stupid. They thought he was extremely brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
And they wondered, where did he get that brilliance from? And that brilliance was from within. That brilliance is within all of us. Now, you see, if we're going to have this story of Jesus today, and tomorrow and the next couple of days, if we're going to have this story, we've got to realize that he was not an accident. He chose the path he chose. And he was not one to allow himself to be hurt. He was not one to allow himself to have a problem. He lived a glorious life. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
And he lived a happy life. And he did not say at the end, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? What did he say at the end?
For this was I prepared.
You see, when we get the right story on these things, it doesn't sound so ugly and so evil. But the thing is, if we come into the story of Jesus knowing that he knew under all circumstances what he was doing, that he knew under all circumstances the things that were going to happen to him, he knew at all times, then what happens in our mind and our thinking? What happens in our mind and our thinking is we don't feel sorry for him. We know he made a judgment, he made a decision, and that same decision we can make. Do we want to make that decision? Do we want to decide who we are? Yes. And he did that from the beginning. His time, our time, and all time is the same time. His time, our time, all time is the same time. He, from the very beginning, thought beautiful thoughts about himself. He, from the very beginning, was aware of his divinity. He, from the very beginning, was a fabulous, beautiful, magnificent being. From the very beginning. Why? Because that's all he accepted for himself. Now, we'll be working with you guys on the idea of from where we are now, can we do these things? From where we are now, can we take the gauntlet? Can we take the mantle? Can we take the gift that is given to us by Jesus the Christ and rise into a higher state of consciousness of being whole and perfect right now? Do you think that a great sharer, a great teacher, would abandon his flock if they were not ready to be abandoned?
No.
Stop and think. Stop and think. Jesus said, look, you klutzes, you're not paying attention to what I teach you. You're not applying what I teach you. So I am going to leave so the Comforter can come, so your own divine self can come. And when your own divine self comes, this thing is running out of power, so bring the power over here to it. This thing is our own choice and our own wisdom and our own joy and our own reality, and it's a wonderful thing. And you can plug it right in there and then plug it in over here. Pick up the plug to plug it in, that's right. You see, nothing happens by chance. And right inside here, We are all perfect. We are all divine. We are all wonderful. Now, did you get enough to drink? I'm happy for you. That's wonderful. It says here, you should charge your battery or switch to another power outlet to keep from losing your work. Thank you. See, we are so blessed by having all these electronic gadgets and whistles and buttons and things like that that talk to us. Because when they talk to us, we should hear what they have to say. And I thought surely this wonderful computer would have had more than three quarters of an hour charge on it, but maybe we didn't have it in very long. Maybe this one was down here and was not plugged in for a period of time, like overnight, to charge it. Now, what has that got to do with the story of Jesus? Well, nothing happens by chance. When we are not plugged in to our inner source, we will soon run out. When we plug into outer sources, we are soon empty. When we plug into the air, to windmills, to the sun, to power plants of any kind, an end comes to them. When we plug in to our own divine inner self, we never run out. We are never without power. And that was the term that Jesus used, I must be about my Father's business. Now, as Jesus was a young boy, do you think that he did any meditation? Do you think he did any introspection? Do you think that he listened to the divine within him? Now, I want you to go a step further. Do you think he listened to the divine within you and that he meditated on the divine within him? He was the divine. He was the inner self. And you see, this is where we want to make a big, giant leap in our own understanding. We are the divine. We don't need any outside energy. We don't need the sun or the wind or the water and what have you that makes electrical power, coal, gas, and what have you. Now, think about it. Think about it. In your little teeny-weeny fingertip, and in your little fingertip itself, you have billions and billions and zillions of atoms. And inside of each atom is, this is the wrong phrase to use for it, but inside of each atom is an atomic bomb. Inside of each atom is so much energy that it can power a community for 100 years. You say, my goodness, then why don't we learn to harvest those atoms to put them to work? We don't learn to harvest those atoms to put that to work because we have too many outside interests that need to be fed. We have the electric company, the gas company. We have all of these companies that are building windmills, that are building solar panels, that are building things, and they need to be fed, you know that? Can you imagine if in an instant, every one of us would turn within to that divine power within us and experience that divinity that's within us in an instant and not need it anymore, what would happen? Well, the electric companies would go out of business. You want light, so you look at the light bulb and it goes on. You want light? Your own consciousness creates your room of light. In the life and teachings of the Masters of the Far East, we read about the temple not made of hands and how they went into this temple, and the temple was completely lit in a beautiful light, sufficient to all of their reading needs. Beautiful. And they went to the table to eat, and it was abundantly prepared with everything that they could enjoy to eat. Now, you say, well, That may be a joke. That may not be a true story. That may not be, and it may be true. But whatever it is what it is. Now, where are you? When are you going to learn that you can use the energy in your little teeny weeny finger one little atom, just one little atom. Now, if each one of us were given one little atom, and we got billions of them, if we were given one little atom, and then with that one little atom, we were to provide ourselves with all the energy we need for a lifetime, we could be anywhere physically. We could physically propel ourselves through space, physically propel ourselves to any experience that we want. Well, now, we don't learn it. We don't learn even with the physiological function of an atom. We don't learn that, and we don't apply that. So how then are we going to learn to go to our own inner reservoir of power, our mental power, spiritual power, to use it and enjoy it? Well, now, my intention with you this week is letting you know how Jesus was one as the power within him, how Jesus used that power and expressed that power, and how Jesus could not just carte blanche go out and give that power to everyone in his world, because if he did, then they wouldn't need anything else, and they wouldn't be prepared for it. And if you had the power to do anything you wanted to do, what would you likely do? You would likely say some things that are not nice to say. You'd likely say, I have the perfect dinner on the table, and poop, there it'd be there. You'd say, I want to go visit Grandma, and she died, that's great, I'm with it. I want to visit Grandma, and she died 10 years ago. Go. Bing! You're right back in time. Or you're with Grandma, whatever she's doing right now, and that's great. And it's okay, you can loosen them. And so this is what we are going to be learning. We're going to be learning that we have this infinite power, this infinite ability to accomplish anything that we want to accomplish, and we do accomplish it in a wonderful, fantastic way. And because we do accomplish it in a wonderful, fantastic way, we are amazing people. So here we have the first segment of our story of Jesus and lecture one. And in a few moments, we will see you for lecture two and continue with our wonderful saga together. Thank you for being with me, and I love you so much.
I love you.